Well, following weeks of political pressure from the Labor Party to hasten the COVID-19 vaccine rollout in Australia, Federal Health Minister Greg Hunt says Australia will accelerate its rollout from late January to early March and has left the door open to bring it forward again in line with medical advice. Calls to bring the rollout forward have been echoed by independent experts as well as many across the political spectrum who want faster vaccination to respond to the UK super strain. One of those calling for an expedited timeline is Federal Opposition Leader Anthony Albanese, who joins me on the line now. Anthony Albanese, welcome to The Daily.
Good morning, Tanya.
It's Tina.
Tina.
Very similar to Tanya, though. You've said that a vaccine is our ticket out of this pandemic and that once one is approved, it needs to be made available to Australians right away, not months down the road like Prime Minister Scott Morrison has planned. His reasoning to stick to the original timeline is that once approved, at the end of this month, there needs to be a certain amount of time needed to test every batch and arrange logistics to deliver the Pfizer vaccine, which must be kept at, I think, minus 70 degrees Celsius.
Indeed.
But is batch testing not already taking place as we speak?
Of course. Look, the Prime Minister came up with a whole range of excuses to justify the fact that we're far from being at the front of the queue for a vaccine. We're right at the back. We're very slow to get agreements in place. Other countries got them in place starting in March last year. We started in September. Other countries have regarded six agreements as being international best practice. We currently have three after the CSL University of Queensland vaccine didn't go forward. So that's one of the reasons why you have these multiple arrangements, so that it's about risk mitigation. And the Prime Minister's excuses, really, sometimes he just gets stubborn, makes a statement, and then tries to verbal any opposition by saying that they're supporting something they're not. We regard the TGA as an important body, the Therapeutic Goods Administration. It has rigorous processes. Once it's approved, any vaccine by the TGA, there's no reason why it shouldn't be rolled out straight away. And given the TGA are expected to approve the Pfizer vaccine in January, then the bringing forward of the date of rollout to the middle of February is just common sense.
Health Minister Greg Hunt has said that in jurisdictions such as California, for instance, uptake of the vaccine has actually been harmed by concerns about the approvals process. Do you think that's a valid point to make? I mean, the debate around vaccines has been a polarising one for quite some time.
Well, the only person who is raising some doubt about the efficacy of the TGA approval process is Greg Hunt and the government itself. That was part of the concern that we have, is that by raising the need for some form of delayed process once it's approved, that doesn't build confidence in the system. I have absolute confidence in the TGA processes. And what's more, we know that the vaccine, when it is approved here and rolled out, It isn't the first place. President-elect Joe Biden has had the Pfizer vaccine on international television in order to promote the support for vaccinations in the United States. And so I just think that sometimes this government gets itself in a predicament of its own making due to its arrogance and its determination to not listen to broader advice. And it reminded me that when we were advocating as well for wage subsidies that became JobKeeper, the Prime Minister at that time dismissed wage subsidies, saying they were very dangerous just before he adopted it. And in this case, he's been critical of Labor's call before he himself has adopted it.
Right. How do you think, how do you foresee the vaccine actually being mandated here in Australia? Do you foresee it becoming compulsory?
Look, I think the government's saying it won't be compulsory, but certainly I think there will be encouragement, and over a period of time, there will be vaccinations required to undertake certain tasks is probably what will happen, just as occurs in other circumstances as well. I note, for example, that Qantas have said that in order to be able to fly internationally, they will have a no jab, no fly policy. And that is also not unusual. In order to fly to South America a few years ago, I had to get certain vaccines. You have to travel to parts of Southeast Asia. You have to show your card upon entry and show that you've had those vaccinations. It really is it's common sense for it to occur. And I know there is a small minority of anti-vaxxers. I've had discussions with them in my electorate office. I don't think that there's any scientific basis for that position, and it should be called out. I'm not terribly sympathetic with that view, but obviously people have to make a decision. But people should just think through about why it is that this generation now is living longer than previous generations, and that generation lived for longer still than their parents. And that's because of health breakthroughs, and one of the important categories of health breakthroughs is vaccinations against disease, and that's been important. And I hope that an overwhelming majority of people are prepared to get vaccinated, not just to help themselves, but to help their fellow Australians.
And so, would Labor support the coalition if there was a call to make this compulsory, the vaccine?
Well, they're saying that they won't. So. That's you know, that isn't
so at the moment it's not really on the cards. No, okay.
Well, that's something that's not contemplated. But what we need to do is really to be prepared to have the debate and back science, whether it's about health, whether it's about climate change. We need to actually walk away from what we've seen emerge. And we saw some political consequences of the emergence increasingly and spread through social media of conspiracy theories in the United States over the last 48 hours with the scenes in Washington, D.C. Like, it's important that political leaders are prepared to stand up and speak out in favour of facts, in favour of science. And the science tells us that vaccinations and mass vaccinations is one of the ways in which we can return to more normal life and activity.
Well, look, on that, I did want to ask you. Obviously, I couldn't speak with you without mentioning the extraordinary events that took place in the United States this week. You, of course, condemned the violence, as did Prime Minister Scott Morrison. But a number of Mr. Morrison's MPs, including George Christensen and Craig Kelly, have been repeatedly spreading misleading claims about the United States election since November. Mr. Christensen, in particular, has said that the election was stolen from President Trump with dodgy votes. I think he said, I don't know if that's a technical term, but dodgy votes was what he said. In response to these conspiracy theories, Mr. Morrison defended the comments as free speech. Do you think that's an appropriate response from our Prime Minister. I think it would be a very different situation if, I don't know, if people were denying, and you know, the Anzacs or Gallipoli or spreading conspiracy theories about those sorts of events.
No, it's a weak and inappropriate response from a Prime Minister who's abrogating his responsibility to lead. The fact is that I think Craig Kelly's tweets overnight or Facebook posts which defended the actions of the insurrectionists yesterday at the Capitol building in Washington helped promote conspiracy theories that somehow the Trump supporters had been infiltrated by extremists from outside, anti-fascists and extreme right-wing supporters, is just entirely not appropriate that has occurred. I don't think that Craig Kelly is fit to sit in the House of Representatives, given he has defended the ransacking of the Capitol building by the extreme supporters of Donald Trump. It must be said, egged on and encouraged by Donald Trump himself. It is, I think, a disgraceful period in US history. The United States is an important ally. It's an alliance based upon shared democratic values. And in my view, there's no place in mainstream politics in Australia for people who aren't prepared to stand up for democracy. And George Christensen and Craig Kelly and these other conspiracists do nothing to add value to our national parliament.
Lastly, because I know you've got a very busy day ahead of you, in an email to all Labor members just before Christmas, you defended the constructive approach that you took in working with the federal government in helping to deal with the pandemic this last year. You and your party largely voted with the government on major legislation in 2020. Does that mean in 2021 we can expect a more aggressive stance from yourself towards the coalition, a return to fighting Tories, which is what you once said you like to do?
Well, of course, we had a responsibility to put the national interest first whilst the pandemic was there, and we make no apologies for that. Indeed, much of the legislation, such as wage subsidies, the increased payments to JobSeeker, support for paid pandemic leave, were things that Labor advocated and were originally opposed by the coalition before they came on board. These were times in which people's health and their jobs were at risk. And we make, I'm very proud of the fact that we didn't do what the coalition did during the global financial crisis, which is just to oppose everything. The question in 2021, as we emerge from the crisis, is who has a plan for jobs and the recovery? Who has a plan to build a stronger and fairer Australia into the future? Who has a plan to create jobs, a plan to tackle climate change, a plan to deal with issues such as childcare reform and economic reform to encourage the participation of women in the workforce? We will be putting forward a strong alternative to the government. Whenever the election is held, whether it's late 2021 or early 2022. And there's another factor behind our response to the pandemic and being constructive as well, which is for some have argued that we should have been more oppositionist and been prepared to just oppose things because that's what opposition's job is to do. Quite frankly, that's an indulgent position. One of the characteristics that I have is seeking to represent the vulnerable and the marginalised, which Labor has always stood up for. And the fact is that during the pandemic, the people who were most vulnerable, who were more likely to lose their job, who were more likely to suffer economically, who are more likely as well to have catastrophic consequences for their health, aren't the well-off and the wealthy. They're people who are marginalised, people who were more vulnerable, and people who Labor always seeks to stand up for. And the consequences of an indulgent, we'll just oppose everything and not worry about the consequences, is that working people and their families and the marginalised would have suffered more. And so there's every reason for Labor to be proud of the response that we had in 2020. We've already started to roll out our alternative vision on childcare, future made in Australia, climate change, rejoining the global efforts, and we'll continue to do that in 2021, and we'll hold the government to account in a rigorous way. I've just done a media conference about how the government has spent $1 billion on advertising since it came into office in 2013. It's important that they be held to account for their waste and their mismanagement, but more importantly for the fact that they don't have a plan for the future.
Anthony Albanese, I appreciate your time this morning.
Thanks very much. Great to talk to you.
That was Federal Opposition Leader Anthony Albanese speaking with me there about the vaccine rollout here in Australia, as well as the federal government's handling of the pandemic, among other things.